Hi, everyone out there, and welcome to the ACTIS podcast, which is a bi-weekly program dedicated to bringing you closer to the difference makers in CDI, as well as sharing the latest news relevant to the CDI profession and to ACTIS. I'm Carla Kozak, Editorial Manager, Products and Events for ACTIS, and I'll also be your host for today's show, which is part of our Conversations with Carla series. Today's topic is improving team culture, and my guest today is Katie Parsley, RN, MSN, CCDS, CPHQ. Parsley is the CDI manager at Providence Health and Services for the Oregon service area. She began her nursing career in the emergency department and started her CDI career in 2017 as a frontline CDI specialist in a multi-hospital system in Texas. She earned her CCDS certification in 2019 and was later promoted to a regional supervisor in 2020, which gave her the opportunity to combine her passion for leadership with her love of CDI. In May 2022, Parsley transitioned to her current role as manager with Providence. She's served on the ACTIS Leadership Council since 2021, was interviewed for the ACTIS podcast and CDI Journal in 2024, and is a member of the 2024-2025 ACTIS CDI Leadership Council Mastermind Group. Now, just a quick reminder that the ACTIS podcast continues to offer 0.5 ACTIS CEU for the first 2 days after posting, which can be used towards your CCDS or CCDSO recertification requirements. And as a bonus, we'll actually be extending that deadline due to the 4th of July holiday. So stay tuned for instructions at the end of the show, as well as that updated deadline. So now, before we jump into our topic, just a brief word about today's sponsor. Today's episode is sponsored by ACTIS Encore. So join us Tuesday, August 12th through Thursday, August 14th for ACTIS Encore Clinical Encoding Online, a special virtual event featuring sessions recorded live during the 2025 ACTIS Conference, which is the entire clinical encoding track and an additional session from the conference. This much-loved staple features core clinical encoding components vital to those engaged in ongoing medical record reviews. Seek inspiration from powerful, thought-provoking, and must-attend sessions, such as a systematic approach to finding CDI query opportunities, optimized sepsis documentation for accurate quality revenue and patient outcomes, acute skin failure, our largest organ fails too, illuminating social determinants of health, a call for better outcomes, and more. Plus, our 10 CEUs from ACTIS and NARI and 9.5 CEUs from AHIMA. Join us to recharge your soul and revive your passion for the profession at ACTIS Encore Clinical Encoding Online. Thank you again for joining me on today's episode, Katie. I'm really excited to have you here with me to talk about such an important topic about how to improve team culture, how to increase engagement. It's all just so important to the work you do every day. So I want to just start by laying the foundation for our conversation. What exactly is team culture? I feel like it could be such a buzzword, especially when you hear culture in any sort of sense of business or workplace. So can you break it down just like a little bit for me?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, Carla. Culture really can come off as a buzzword. But when you break it down and you're looking at teams, there are really two basic challenges that a team will face. One of those is integrating many different individuals of various experience and backgrounds together to make an effective whole. And then the second challenge is how they are able to adapt effectively to the environment around them. So as teams overcome or find solutions to these two challenges, there's inherently a collective learning that happens. And over time, this creates a set of shared values, beliefs, and behavior patterns. And that is what is called their culture. These differentiate from one team to another, from an organization to another. And it really influences the way that employees think, the way they feel, and the way they behave in their workplace.
That was really well explained. Thank you for that. And just another term that I know is kind of important to this conversation and important to the idea of culture and teams is psychological safety. So again, just while we're laying the foundation for our conversation, can you talk a little bit about what that means or what it is and why it's important?
Yeah, and I feel like that's a word I've been hearing a lot more lately also. But it's a term, it was coined actually back in 1999 by Amy Edmondson, and she was a Harvard Business School professor. She was doing a lot of research on teamwork, and what she found was that the people who reported the most errors weren't actually performing worse. They just felt more safe and more comfortable reporting errors. They were able to talk about them more. And so she coined this term and this difference as psychological safety. And she's written several books about it since, which are also wonderful. But psychological safety, by definition, is when people feel safe enough to take interpersonal risks by speaking up, sharing their concerns, asking questions, sharing their ideas. And this trust and mutual respect in which people are comfortable being themselves. And it lives at the level of the group. So again, within the organization that you work, it's likely there are different level of psychological safety between different groups and different teams.
And what are, I guess, the dangers or the benefits of the different levels? Like what, if there's a low level of psychological safety, what, how is that dangerous? Or if there's a high level, can you just explain how that's beneficial?
Yeah. So some of the dangers really, you know, up front, what you can see is people don't speak up. They don't share, they don't ask questions, and the team's ability to grow and innovate is really impacted. But also a lack of that psychological safety can create an illusion of success that eventually can turn into serious failures, like her research on medication safety. That can lead to serious failures that impact patients when they don't feel safe enough to report their errors. So as far as benefits, really a psychological safe team feels comfortable openly sharing ideas, asking questions. They don't have that fear of ridicule or rejection, the negative consequences. And their research has really shown that teams with high psychological safety have an improved performance. They have more innovation, and the employees are more engaged. Also, early discussion and identification about the possible errors or shortcomings really can also help mitigate the size or impact of the failure had it continued without being brought up early in the process.
So based on what you're saying, it really is important for the team's overall success, both in terms of, you know, interacting with each other, but also accomplishing their goals, that it's just really important to have this high level of psychological safety. So how can leaders of teams help foster that high level of psychological safety within their teams?
Yeah, I think it's really important for leaders to foster this. And it really comes down to the leader. Several different things we can do: setting clear expectations of the work and explaining the why. Who does it impact? Why are we doing this? What is the purpose? Is really important for the team. You can create forums for input and provide guidance for that discussion. What is accepted and what is not? For example, in our discussions, there's no condescension or judgment allowed. Everyone's expected to remain professional and respectful to each other. So just setting those boundaries, but creating an opportunity for the team to give feedback and provide their input. For leaders, also showing humility and listening to the team has shown that the teams engage more. So you have to be open to their feedback and opinions, acknowledge them, thank them for speaking up, and then make it safe for failure. You want to, rather than preventing the failure, promoting learning. So changing that viewpoint of failure and making it a positive experience. So how can we improve in the future? and brainstorm together on next steps.
I love that idea of making it safe for failure or safe to fail, because we are human. We're going to fail. We're not going to get it right the first time, every time. And so the important thing is being able to recover from that, being able to learn from it. So I think that what you said about that is just so important and so relevant. Now, I know that you and your team did a lot of work to really create a positive culture and improve engagement. So I want to ask, before we talk about that, can you set the scene for me a little bit? Like, what, as the leader or as someone looking in, what were the signs that the team's culture could benefit for improvement? Or what things did you see that maybe worried you and sort of started this whole process?
Yeah, so I joined my team about 3 years ago. And just a few months prior to that, my director, my one-up, had joined the team also. So our team had a whole new leadership team. And what we saw was when we were in meetings or our weekly huddles, no one spoke, no one would make eye contact, even on camera. We had group chats established that nobody used. And everyone, the feedback I got was that there was a fear of asking questions because it would show or give the impression that they didn't know how to do their job, which would result in increased scrutiny. And so they were afraid to speak up. They were afraid to offer different opinions. And you could just sense that amongst the team. And that it made, you know, really quiet, very long meetings when no one wanted to speak up and give their opinion. So you could just feel that overwhelming fear or uncomfortable, you know, not sure if they could give their opinion or ask questions without having punitive actions in response.
So once you observed that, what next steps did you take? What did you do to try and sort of reverse this and create that culture of psychological safety, create that positive team culture? What strategies came into play?
Yeah, so we've done a lot. First, having one-on-one conversations with all the team members is really important. So I have set up every 4 weeks automatically on their calendar, it's a 30-minute one-on-one check-in with me. So it's not, you know, a surprise meeting with their manager that makes them worried. They know every month we have a check-in and they can come and ask any questions. And that helped build the trust. We started a shared governance model and really worked to foster that environment. So shared governance is that shared decision-making between the caregivers or the frontline nurses and the leaders. So we try very hard in any situation that we can to come to the team with the pain points or where we're at, and then say, this is where we want to be. How do we get there? And as a team, they provide the input and they help give guidance and develop the steps we want to take to get to where we're going. It's not always possible. There's always, you know, some executive changes that we can't, you know, we don't have a whole lot of say over, but we explain that and explain the why, and they completely understand. And they know that anytime we can involve them in those changes, we do. So we'll create work groups, all from volunteers who will focus on developing those next steps. We've had a lot of really successful changes come from this, like restructuring our escalation process, creating clear workflows and algorithms to follow, creating new teams and specialty roles. So that has been really successful in giving them a forum for their input. We also have committees. So these are also made up entirely of volunteers, but we have a policy and procedure committee, a clarification committee, which works on our query templates, our We have a caregiver connection committee, which works on, because we're all remote, having those ways that we can stay connected in a remote environment. And these are chaired and led by the caregivers. I am on the meeting just for answering questions or giving suggestions, but our team really is the one who leads it and guides it. And they can pick and choose what they want to be part of if they want to be part of a committee, and it's not required. We also have specialty roles. So we have service line liaisons from our frontline CDS. We have four CDS who are part of our team called Clinical Documentation Quality Integrity Group, which we adopted that name from elsewhere in our system. And they focus on HACs, PSIs, mortality reviews as part of their FTE. We have a CDL, who is our clinical documentation liaison, who is our liaison with coding for DRG mismatches and communications when we can't resolve it. And then one of our specialty roles actually came as a suggestion from our team is our centralized reconciliation team. And they manage all coder mismatches and final reconciliation. And that was suggested by our team after hearing about it from elsewhere and really developed by the caregivers. And it's been has a lot of impact, great for our team, and everyone's pretty happy with that. Let's see, we have those group chats I talked about. For those, it really took a lot of patience and positive support for those engaging. So we have those ground rules that we talked about for communication. And at the beginning, to help foster that, anytime someone would be brave enough to ask me a question, I'd really encourage them to put it in the chat. And a lot of times at the beginning, I was the one answering. And anytime someone else would respond, I'd say, you know, oh, I totally agree with so-and-so. Thank you so much for responding. And that really helped give that positive encouragement. And slowly more and more people responded, to where now I very rarely have to comment. And it's really helps the team feel more connected and engaged because they are helping each other, bringing back the evidence to support answers. And it's really a positive environment that people can go to with questions. And then we also have non-punitive audits. And I know audits can be a whole subject in and of itself. But just briefly, we really truly focus on the educational opportunities rather than a score. So they aren't scored. It doesn't impact their annual productivity or metrics. It's really just focused on how they can grow as a professional CDI.
There's so much to unpack here, but one thing that you said that really stood out to me was seeing the growth in those group chats that you created. It must just be a really cool feeling to sit back and not respond and watch people help each other instead of looking maybe to their manager. They're asking their peers and their peers are answering. I just imagine that just must make you really proud. I'm proud thinking about it. Like, it's just such an exciting thing, because I know how often I go to my coworkers and ask for help, and how much that's encouraged on our ACTIS team to use each other as resources. And it's rewarding too, when you can be on the other end of that and say, oh, I helped this person. I knew that answer. So I think that is just a huge, huge thing.
Yeah, it's really nice. And for new people coming in, it's nice to see that other people ask questions and it's okay not to know, and to really get to know some of your team members through those conversations.
And I think it goes back to this psychological safety that we talked about at the beginning too. You're creating an environment where everybody asks questions, whether it's somebody new or somebody super experienced, and it's all positive responses, positive feedback. Everybody wanting to help each other instead of, why are you asking that question, or shouldn't you know, you know? So I think that's awesome.
It helped also, I think, at the beginning, because I don't know the answer to everything either. And it helps for the leader to say that. I don't know, but I remember there was a coding clinic on that. Or let me check ACTIS and find out. And then come back with a response. And it helps open the conversation for people who do have the coding clinic memorized. So that it's okay not to know every answer up front. And showing that they aren't the only ones who don't know. It's okay to have to go look for more information.
Yes. And one other thing that you said that really stood out to me was the scheduled one-on-one check-ins. I thought that that was a really unique way of making yourself approachable and of building that trust with different members of the team. But I did wonder, was that something that took time for people to get used to? Did it make them nervous? I know if I had a regularly scheduled meeting with someone, you know, that maybe wasn't my direct manager or even that was my direct manager, it might be a little intimidating. Did you have to overcome some of that sort of hesitancy?
Oh, yes. Yeah, they were at the beginning very short and brief and quiet. And so I would just start asking questions. And what are your barriers? What can I help with? What are you seeing? And one thing I really don't focus on their metrics and productivity. If there is any problem with that, we have a separate conversation. Their rounding calls are to help with their questions and things I can do to help them. And so that's really what we focused on. And slowly they would start to ask questions or they'd bring questions. And so now, you know, people will come with a list of questions that they have that could wait until our rounding call. Or, you know, we would talk about if they were open to it, their family or what vacation they're going on. Some people are comfortable sharing that and some aren't. So really trying to make them comfortable and understand that I'm here to help you. And it is not, you know, something punitive that you're in trouble. And I think having it on the calendar already really helped that because it wasn't me suddenly adding a call that we need to talk about something specific.
Yes, absolutely. And I know that we've already touched on this a few times, but I just wanted to give one last opportunity to sort of reflect on it. But are there any other ways that you really have felt like you've seen the success, you've seen the positive culture be built or that level of psychological safety rise just beyond, again, what we've talked about so far?
Yeah, beyond what we've already talked about, one thing that is really evident is when we have our weekly meetings or staff meetings, people respond and they talk. And, you know, we'll go over our surveys and I'll ask for opinions or what's your pain point? And people will actually give feedback. Even if it's something that they feel like can't change, it will start the conversation or have someone else's brain going. And so that feedback and interaction and engagement has, you know, done a complete 180, which has really made it a great environment to, you know, come up with new solutions and how can we be creative with what we have. And that's all led by our team.
It's very, this might sound silly, but it's very inspiring to me to hear just the difference that letting people know they have a voice makes, because I feel like so much of what you've said boils down to giving each member of the team a voice in the team. And that in itself is what has created such a positive environment, is letting people know that they can be heard and we want them to be heard. So I just think that it's just very exciting to think, to see that in action.
Yeah. And it's, I only have a very limited amount of ideas and viewpoint. And so giving everyone else a voice, we would not be where we're at in our team without the voices and opinions and ideas from the team. So giving them that opportunity has helped our team grow so much more than we have been in the past.
And I think it really is a team effort too, when it comes to improving culture and improving engagement. And that's why when I was asking you questions, I tried to sort of phrase it as, what did you and the team do, or what did everyone do? Because it's not something that one person can achieve. So,
right. I totally agree.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with me, Katie. I thought this was a super interesting and enlightening conversation. I know we didn't get into the nitty gritty of clinical stuff or specifically coding or CDI, but I think this was just such an interesting topic about us as humans and a different aspect of the work that CDI professionals do every day. So again, thank you for being here. But unfortunately we did run out of time. So as always, if our audience has any questions about this topic, I just want to let them know they can feel free to email the ACTIS team at info@actis.org. And Katie, it was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carla.
Now it's time for the ACTIS update, which is a regular segment of our show where I get to talk to you about the latest on what's going on inside the association. It's a really cool opportunity for us to let you know about some things we're doing here at ACTIS, as well as pull the curtain back a little and give you a behind the scenes view. So first, I want to just say I'm so excited that the July and August edition of CDI Journal is now available to all ACTIS members. This month's theme is education, and we've got some really awesome articles focused on topics such as resident education, CDI onboarding, auditing, sepsis, and education in the digital age, just to name a few. And for those of you that may not know, just as a reminder, the CDI Journal is a bi-monthly publication that is exclusively available to ACTIS members. Every other month, our editors take a deep dive into an aspect of CDI, writing articles focused on a central theme. They work really hard to get to talk to people that are in the field dealing with this particular area. So it's just a great way to see firsthand what's going on in the field. But we also accept articles written by CDI professionals like you. And without your articles, the journal wouldn't be possible. So I also wanted to share that we're currently accepting submissions for our September and October edition, which is focused on global perspectives on CDI, how CDI impacts all areas of healthcare. So if you have something that you feel like falls into that theme, please do share it with us. Or even if it doesn't fall to that theme, we're always looking for articles, so don't be shy. The deadline is coming up, though. It's August 1st, so just a little over a month away. But that's plenty of time to get your ideas to paper. You can reach out to the ACTIS team at info@actis.org at any time with any questions you may have. And if you're interested in getting involved with ACTIS, but writing isn't really your thing, I'd encourage you to consider applying to speak at one of our 2026 in-person events instead. Join us on the podium in Chicago next April for our ACTIS Conference, ACTIS Symposium Outpatient CDI, or ACTIS Physician Advisor Forum. So now through Monday, July 21st, we are accepting speaker proposals for each of these three events next spring. Applying is easy too. You just want to use the link in today's show notes to create an account, and then you can begin your submission from there. You'll want to have your title ready with a session description, learning objectives, biography, and any co-speaker information just before you begin. We also do really encourage you to submit any supplemental material that will allow our events committee to better evaluate your session, such as draft slides or an outline, anything that really gets into the nitty-gritty of what your session will discuss. This helps our events committee get a good picture of what your session will cover. Additionally, up to two speakers per session will receive complimentary registration for the conference. That's our way of thanking you for giving back and sharing your experience. So if you'd like to learn more, see a list of suggested topics for the three events, or submit your application, just going to encourage you to click the link in today's show notes. And if you're interested in any of the things we've talked about in today's session, just a reminder that all of the links are also available in the show notes. As a reminder before we close out, each ACTIS podcast episode offers 0.5 ACTIS CEU, which can be used toward recertifying your CCDS or CCDSO credential for those who listen to the show in the first 2 days from the time of publication. To receive your 0.5 CEU, go to the show page on actus.org by clicking on the Actus podcast link under the free resources tab, and then click on today's episode from the list on that page. You'll want to scroll down to the recording of today's episode and press play. At the end of the video, when the timer hits zero, a link to the CEU evaluation will appear. Go ahead and click on that, take our survey, and your certificate will be automatically emailed to you upon submitting the brief evaluation. To ensure your certificate reaches you and doesn't get trapped in your organization's spam filters, we do really suggest that you use a personal email address when completing the CEU evaluation form. These instructions are also laid out on the show page if you'd like to follow along there. Now, due to the upcoming July 4th holiday, we have extended the cutoff for today's episode CEU to Monday, July 7th at 11 p.m. Eastern. After that point, the CEU period will close and you will not be eligible for the 0.5 CEU for this week's episode. Now, with that, we have reached the end of today's Actus podcast episode, but we'll be back in 2 weeks on Wednesday, July 16th. If you'd like to receive reminders about each episode, do make sure you're subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, CDI Strategies, because it always includes a link to the new episode when it's available. And you can listen to the show at any time on the Actus website or via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. All the links we discussed during today's episode will be available in the show notes so that you can learn more. And we'd really appreciate it if you'd take a minute to leave us a 5-star review on your podcast app, because it does help others find our show. Our intro and outro music is Media Noche by DNP, and our ad music is Take Me Higher by Jazar, both of which we have obtained from the Free Music Archive. If you have any suggestions for future guests or topics, don't hesitate to email us at info@actus.org. And until next time, take care.